wish to go through the process of salting, you have an alternative, which is broiling the meat. Anyone who has broiled meat has had the experience that you look at a piece of meat and it's large, and you say, oh, this can feed an army. And then you broil the meat, and you have a very small piece which is left. And the reason is because the liquids, in the course of broiling, have left the meat, have drained down. This is very important to know, because when it comes to kashering udders, you're also dealing with the issue of a substance which is within the meat. It's not a prohibited substance, but, you know, the prohibition against mixing milk and meat comes in the language of lo tevashel, who shall not cook kid in the milk of its mother, gdi b'chalei v'imo. And in the case of the udder, it's not b'chalei v'imo, but it is cooking of milk and meat together. So how do you kasher an udder? You have two ways of kashering an udder. The first is as follows. Please listen carefully. And if any of you are going to do it, check before you do it, because you may not remember the details. There are two ways in which you can kasher an udder. The first one is you tear it open and you scrape it, memar kimoto. And if you do so, you are then permitted to broil it the same way you're permitted to broil liver, though, of course, you do not broil it together with other meat, because what's going to drip down is not the blood, but the milk, which is going to exit the udder. Alternately, you may wish... Pardon me?
You broil it in your basic fat or your milk?
It's a wonderful, wonderful question. The answer is you broil it in your flesh. Well, broiling is done just as with liver. You won't broil liver on anything else. And here, too, you have a problem. If you're broiling it, you're broiling it on some kind of with a spit or on some kind of a grate. But what happens if you wish to cook it? And then you'll ask me, well, what about the knife? The answer is the knife that you cut it with, you can cut it with a fleshik knife, yoredeya. But what happens if you would like to make a stew? You'd like to make udder stew. Or you'd like to make some kind of a pashtida, some kind of a, well, I guess you would say that's a stew, or you'd like to cook an udder. Then you do as follows. You tear open the udder. You need to slash it. You need to slash it crosswise. That's very important. And then you bang it against the wall until there is no lachluchit, until there is no liquid left within the udder. Why are you banging it against the wall? It's very, very logical. Metichim oto bakir. The reason you're banging it against the wall is because the liquid needs to drip down. So you'll bang it, and when there is no liquid left, you can then kasher it as if it's a piece of regular meat and use it. It is preferable to cook it separately and not to cook it with another piece of meat. But if b'dieved you have cooked it with another piece of meat, once you have gone through this process, you can go ahead and you can eat it. Now, why am I telling you this? Why have I come to Israel in order to tell you here, when you have good butcher chefs, about kashering udders? Follow along. You have a gemara from Chulin Kufyud, the end of Masechet Chulin, in the context of discussing chal. Chal is the Hebrew name, not modern Hebrew, but it is the halachic name for the udder of the cow. So we read as follows. Besura lo achli kachli, bepumbedita achli kachli. In Surah, they did not eat chal, they did not eat udders. In Pumbedita, they ate udders. Surah and Pumbedita were the two main centers in Babylonia where you had the dominant yeshivot. There are two other centers that we speak of at different times, Naharda'a and Matamachasya, But the two primary centers were in Sura and Pumbedita. The story that we're going to read is taking place approximately at the end of the 3rd century of the Common Era. Rani Bar Tamre, who Rani Bar Dekule mi Pumbedita, ikla lesura b'ma'ale yoma di kipure. Rani Bar Tamre, and then we hear of the other name by which he is known, Rani Bar Dekule. Both of those, Tamre and Dekule, refer to a palm tree from Pumbedita, came to Sura on Erev Yom Kippur. Now, on Erev Yom Kippur, what's everybody doing? Obviously, everyone is preparing. You're preparing for the fast. You're preparing your Suda Mafseket. You're preparing the meal that you're going to have before the fast. We read in Sura they did not eat udders, and in Pumbedita they ate udders. So Rami Bar Tamre of Pumbedita came to Sura on Erev Yom Kippur. And obviously, what's everyone doing with their udders? They're discarding them, because in Sura you don't eat udders. What do you think this gentleman from Pumbedita is going to do? He's going to collect the udders. So that's your story. That's the beginning of the story. Afkinhu kule alma lekachlinhu. All of the people took out their udders, afkinhu, shadinhu, and they discarded the udders. Azal ihu, he came, naktinhu, he took them, achlinhu, he ate them. Al tuha lepame de Rav Chisda. They brought him before Rav Chisda. Now Rav Chisda was a very important individual amongst the Amoraim. He was one of the preeminent Amoraim. If my voice dies out because I'm trying to turn towards everyone, I'd like to ask the people who are in the back just to signal me and I will speak louder. Rav Chisda was the Rosh Hashiva in Sura. He was also the Dayan in Sura. And Rami Bar Tamre was cited eating udders on Erev Yom Kippur. So they brought him before Rav Chisda. Amarle, amai ta'avid hachi. Rav Chisda said, why do you do thus? Why are you eating udders? Amarle, me'atra de Rav Yehuda ana de achim. He said, I come from the place of Rav Yehuda. This is Rav Yehuda Bar Yechezkel, the famous Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedita. So he said, well, I come from the place of Rav Yehuda, who eats udders. Amar le, v'leit lach nuknim alav chumrei hamakom sheyatza misham, v'chumrei hamakom shehalach lesham. Do you not observe? We place upon him the stringencies of the place that he came from and the place that he came to. Let me explain to you what this is about. If you have a stringency, a chumrah, which is accepted in one place, it is, today, it's very hard to talk about a place, because generally, you don't have a mara d'atra of a city. You don't have one rabbinic figure who is preeminent within a city, and you don't have one congregation within a city. But the Jewish communities were organized both in Palestine and in Babylonia, and later on this was the case in the Middle Ages also, with a congregation in a city. And the halakha is, and this is mentioned in the Mishnah in Pesachim, that if a person goes from one place to another, if you are not planning to return to what to the area from which you came, then you needn't continue observing the stringencies of that place. If you are planning to return and there is a minhag, a stringency, you follow it. And the same thing goes regarding the new place. Well, the new place, in respect for the Piskei Halakha of that community, you observe their stringencies. Let me give you an example. The Mishnah of Pesachim talks about the fact that there... I think our amplification just stopped. Is there anyone here? Okay, fine. The Mishnah in Pesachim talks about whether you can... is it working? Okay. The Mishnah in Pesachim talks about whether melacha, whether labor can be performed on Erev Pesach in the morning. Labor which is not related to Pesach. So for instance, if I am a shoemaker repairing shoes which are work shoes and not shoes for Pesach, may I do that work on Erev Pesach? Or if I am a painter, may I paint a store which is going to be closed on Pesach? Work which is related to Pesach, of course, can be done, but work which is not related to Pesach. At what point, who is in charge of the amplification? Okay, we're getting that fixed. Now it's working?
Yeah.
Okay. If you are performing labor which is unrelated to Pesach, which is part of your work, can you do so on Erev Pesach in the morning? And in some communities, the ruling was you cannot, and in other communities, the ruling was you can. Midoraita, this is not a problem, but there were communities who legislated thus, and communities who legislated thus. So we are told, if you come from a community where labor is not performed in the morning, and you go to a community where labor is performed, assuming you are planning to return to your home community, you do not perform labor. On the other hand, if you come from a community which does perform labor, let's make this more concrete. Let's say I live in Jerusalem, which I have the privilege of doing. Let's just say in Yerushalayim, we do not perform labor in the morning of Erev Yom Kippur, but in Chicago, you do. If I come to you, nevertheless, I may not perform labor because it is my custom not to perform labor. If you do perform labor, but you come to Jerusalem, you nevertheless do not perform labor, you must refrain from performing labor. So Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda said to Rami, don't you know that if you come from a place where they eat udders to a place that they do not eat udders, you may not eat udders. Whereupon Rami said to him, Amar lechutz latchum achal tinpu. I ate the udders outside of city limits. Ubamet vitinpu. Whereupon Rav Chisda said, well, how did you broil those udders? In other words, if you're in the city, presumably you use someone's oven, but how did you broil the udders outside? Amagle beforze. He said, I did so with grape pits. Now, grape pits contain oil, and apparently they were a kindling material which were used. So Rami said, well, I did so with grape pits. Whereupon Rav Chisda said to him, V'dilma miyayin esechu. You use grape pits. Maybe those grape pits were of wine which had been libated in pagan rites and therefore was prohibited. You're not just, if the grapes have been used for pagan rites, they become prohibited. Amar lei lachar shnei masar chodesh havu. Rami said to him, these were old great pits. It was after 12 months, so that even if they had had the quality of being Yayin Nesef, they would have lost that quality, and therefore they could be used. V'dilma d'gezel hu. Well, maybe they were stolen great pits. Amar le ye'ush ba'alim havei d'chad chadchuko behu chilfi. He said, apparently, the, let's see how I translated that. The owners had despaired, and there were metals growing amongst them. Now, what Yeush Ba'alim means is that if an article is lost and can be recovered, can be identified by the owner, we then have the obligation of taking that article. We have the mitzvah of Hashavat HaVeda. You put that article aside and wait the owner's coming. You publicize that you have found it, and you await the owner coming to reclaim the article. But what happens if I lose a $100 bill on a main street or in some mall? Obviously, there's no way of identifying that bill, and therefore the owner despairs of finding it, which removes his relationship with that bill, and then anyone who finds it can take it. So Rami says, well, obviously, even if these great pits had once belonged to someone, they no longer belong to anyone. Ye'ush ba'alim havei, because there was vegetation growing amongst the great pits. Chazia delo havei menach tefillin. Rav Chista saw that Rami was not wearing tefillin. Now, today tefillin are worn by most men only during davening. But in the time of the Gemara, there were many who wore tefillin all day long. And Rav Chista looked at Rami and said, where are your tefillin? Whereupon Rami answered him, Amar le mai tama lo menach tefillin. What is the reason that you're not wearing tefillin? Amar le cholime ayin hu, v'amar Rav Yehuda cholime ayin patur min hatefillin. Whereupon Rami said, well, I have a stomach ailment, and Rav Yehuda has said that anyone who has a stomach ailment does not wear tefillin. Chazia delo havei karami chute. He saw that he was without strings. Without strings means without tzitzit. Amar le mai tama leit lach chute. He said, what is the reason that you do not have strings? Amar le talit she'ulahi. Va'amar Rav Yehuda, talit shula kol shloshim yom ptura min hatzitzit. This is beginning, I think, to grate a bit upon Rav Chista. He said, well, it's a borrowed garment. You know, today when we speak of tzitzit, we talk about an arba kanfot, a beged, which one purchases that has tzitzit upon it. But in their days, the tzitzit was part of their clothing, their actual clothing. And Rav Chista looked at him and he saw he's not wearing tzitzit. So he said, where are your tzitzit? So Rami answered him, well, this is a borrowed garment. And and Rav Yehuda tells us that a borrowed garment does not require tzitzit. Let's stop at this point, recap this conversation, and then try to figure out what's going on here, and then we'll continue with the story. So we started out by hearing that in Surah they did not eat udders, in Pumbedita they ate udders. And you have a story which takes place on Erev Yom Kippur. On Erev Yom Kippur, you have Rami Bar Tamrei who goes from Sura, excuse me, from Pumbedita to Sura. He sees the others, and he takes them. And it is reported to Rav Chisda. They bring him before Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda says, why are you eating udders? And he says, well, I'm from Pumbedita, where Rav Yehuda eats udders. Rav Yehuda permits us to eat udders. And then Rav Chisda asks him, well, do you not observe the halakha, that when you go from one place to another, you observe the stringencies of both places? Whereupon his answer is what? I ate it outside of city limits. In other words, those stringencies do not apply to me. Then Rav Chisda says, well, how did you broil your udders? And he says, I broiled them with grape pits. And then Rav Chisda says, well, how do you know that those grape pits were not Yayin Nesech? And he says, because they were old grape pits, and they had, even had they been Yayin Nesech, they would have lost that quality. And then he says to him, well, maybe they were stolen. I think the order was the other way around. Maybe they were stolen, they're old, Yeyush Ba'alim Haveh, maybe it's Yayin Nesech, they're old, they've lost that quality. Then Rav Chisda looks at him, and he sees that Rami is not wearing tefillin. And he says to him, why are you not wearing tefillin? And he answers, what? Well, I have a stomach ailment, and Rav Yehuda says that those who have a stomach ailment are exempt from wearing tefillin. Whereupon Rami then says, I'm sorry, Rav Chisda then says, well, what about your tzitzis? Where are your tzitzis? And he says, I have a borrowed garment, and Rav Yehuda says that if you have a borrowed garment, you do not wear tzitzit. You do not need tzitzit for 30 days. Can you please tell me what you think is going on in this Gemara? I think you can read it two ways. Let me hear what you think. Please speak loudly, because there are people sitting in the next room. Yes.
There, that the Pumbedisan Rav is trying to make a point to be difficult. He came to this place to spit in their faces.
What we heard here is that Rami Bar Tamri is what we would call in Israel a tipus, that he's a character, and he's finding a legal way to maneuver around the law. That's possibility A that we hear. Yes.
To me, it sounds almost like a kid trying to get out of the parents of religion. Well, oh, there's a little loophole here, and a little loophole there, and a little loophole there.
So,
trying to find his way through.
What we're hearing from both ladies who have spoken is that you have someone who's really smart, who knows how to find the loopholes. Yes.
I had two thoughts. Does humor exist in the Gemara? This is a funny story. But the other thought was, it's a way of teaching. We learn a whole lot of about halakha in these exchanges.
We certainly do. Yes.
I think it's trying to sort of tongue-in-cheek show you could have all the right answers and yet end up with the wrong result.
So far, I agree with nobody. Yes. In other words, it's not that his eyes meandered to the tefillin or meandered to the lack of tefillin or tzitzit. Okay.
It's
possible that this traveling rabbi is just a poor, sick person that can't afford to eat the food in the city, and gets so he eats outside his own food that he can get for free, and he's sick, so he doesn't have to wear the filling.
I think the reason that the Gemara has included this story is because it's a deeply troubling story that you have here. Take a look. You have a Vad Mishmeret Hatzniut. You have a magistrate troll who has reported Rami Bar Kamre to Rav Chisda. You discover in the course of the story that this man is sick, that this man is too poor to have his own garment, and nobody has seen him picking in the garbage on Erev Yom Kippur. And why is he picking in the garbage? Is he picking in the garbage because he's seeking to find a way around the law, or because no one has noticed that there's a stranger in town? Erev Yom Kippur is a time in which we're all preparing to go before Beit Din Shalmala the next day. Everyone is eating on Erev Yom Kippur. Everyone is so focused on consuming food on Erev Yom Kippur because you know you're going to be in shul all day. You don't want to fall asleep in shul. You know that what happens in shul on Erev Yom Kippur is going to determine what's going to occur with you during the course of the year. And you know that you are going before Kisei HaKavod, you know that you're going before the heavenly throne, the heavenly court, on Erev Yom Kippur, at which time you're going to be judged, and you're going to seek rachamim, you're seeking mercy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's this horrifying picture, which the Gemara is giving us, in which you have a poor, sick man who comes to town, and people are totally absorbed with preparing themselves to ask rachamim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no one notices that they themselves should be acting with rachamim towards a stranger. So what do you have? You have this man who sees discarded udders. By the way, I don't know whether your experience of eating udders was enjoyable or not. I gave this talk somewhere, and an individual came over to me afterwards and said, "By the way, have you ever eaten udders?" And I said, "No, I haven't." He said to me, "Well, would you like to know what an udder tastes like?" And I said, "I'd very much like to know." And the answer is, well, it's got a rather tough consistency, sort of like macaroni and cheese that's been baked for too long, but with an overtaste of bologna. I don't know if this is your experience.
It's been a long time, I don't know.
Okay. There are these two Talmidei Chachamim in Jerusalem who have, well, in Israel, not in Jerusalem, who have somewhat exotic interests, and every couple of years they run something called Seudat HaMsorah, where they bring those kosher foods which are not normally available, and they explain the halachot. You sit there and you have many, many, many different kinds of meat, including locusts, and there is an explanation of the kashrut of each article, and they have brought udders to the table. So we look at this story, and you see someone who is having not a choice cut of meat, who's going around to the garbage, and people see him. It's not that people do not see him, but he is reported for eating udders. And the Gemara tells us this story because when you contemplate for yourself that this is taking place on Erev Yom Kippur, you see here a call on the part of the Gemara for religious sincerity. The Gemara obviously wants one to look beyond one's nose and see what's going on within Klal Yisrael and see what's going on within one's community, and not to dare ask rachamim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu before you yourself are ready to display rachamim to another person. I think that that is one way of reading this story. Yes?
All of Rav Chisda's questions after the first two are irrelevant to the issue, though. The first two questions he's asking, how can you eat it? After that, it was off into a tangent. It's irrelevant to the question that was at hand.
Well, not completely, because it would seem to us, and I think that is what provoked the first group of answers, that Rav Chisda is looking to show him that he was doing something wrong. So it turns out that all of these things that looked wrong were not wrong. That on every account, there is a judging someone wrongfully. First of all, there is an obliviousness to the fact, to one's social responsibility. The Rambam says, at the beginning of Hilchot, not the beginning, within Hilchot Matnot Aniyim, Chayav Adam Lizaher B'Mitzvat Tzedaka Yoter Mikol Mitzvat Aseh. Rambam says that one needs to take greater care with tzedakah than any other positive commandment. Sh'atzedakah siman latzadik zera Avraham Avinu, because tzedakah is the sign of a righteous person, the seed of Avraham Avinu, the offspring of Avraham Avinu. And through this story, at every juncture, you have Rami Bar Tamre being judged wrong. The people bring him, the people who should have invited him to come for a meal, instead bring him before Rav Chisda because he has violated a local takana. And Rav Chisda, this is Rav Chisda, the great Rav Chisda, and the Gemara doesn't hold back in criticism neither of biblical figures nor of rabbinic figures. And you have a story here in which at every juncture of the story it looks as if he is doing something wrong. And in each case you see, Havei dan et chavercha lechav zchut, you should judge your fellow person benevolently, and at every step of this story, mistake is made after mistake after mistake. It's a very deeply troubling story. There, you know, when you read a story, I always read a parak of Tanakh, stopping myself in the middle and asking myself, now, is there an alternative ending? It's going to end this way, but could it have ended this way? And here, you look at the story and you say, how many misjudgments have been made in this story? Okay, that's one way of reading it, but I think there's another way of reading it. Anyone else? Go ask yourself, why in Surah did they prohibit the eating of udders, and why in Pumbedita did they permit the eating of udders? Why in Surah would it be prohibited?
Maybe they didn't know how to capture it.
Because of what?
Maybe they didn't know how to kosher.
Maybe, well, obviously, Rav Chisda knows how to kosher an udder.
Is one city more poverty stricken than the other? Yeah.
That's a wonderful question. I was wondering about that. Pumbedita was actually a more cosmopolitan city than Sura, located on the rivers. It was a major center of trade, and no, it was not an impoverished city. That would have been my assumption, that in Surah they could afford to discard the udders, but in Pumbedita they could not afford to discard the udders. Yes?
How do they judge somebody so harshly when there's someone coming from out of town that doesn't know the rules, regulation. It was not anything that was not edible.
Obviously, the Gemara, according to the way we have interpreted it, the first reading of the Gemara is speaking about judging others benevolently before you yourself are going before Beit Din Shamala to be judged. And the Gemara is also speaking about chemla, about mercy, about goodness, about chesed to others before you yourself ask chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I think there's another way of reading this, and I would ask why, if the reason is not economic, why would in Surah there be a restriction of eating udders, a restriction of the permissible, and not in Pumbedita? Yes.
Well, maybe it's a difference in the way they pass the Shilas. For example, the story, the poor woman who brings a chicken to the rabbi to determine if it's kosher. Because he knows she's poor, he bends over backwards to call it kosher. Whereas for somebody else who could afford maybe buy another chicken, he would say, okay, it's not kosher. In other words, it's a question of using a little bit of chesed, whatever I call it, and asking in China.
I don't think that's the issue here, although you are absolutely correct. There is something, there are factors which halakha takes into account in order to arrive at a lenient ruling, such as sha'at hadchak, extenuating circumstances, extremely pressing circumstances, when that rabbi who is paskening for that woman and saying the chicken is okay if he is able to, is doing so because he has found snifim lahakel. He has found within halakha factors which he can rely upon, which under regular circumstances we would not, but these are extenuating circumstances. But here you don't have a psak halakha. What you have here is that initially in Surah they legislated against eating udders. It's not that you have a situation, then you permit the poor woman to eat udders. In Surah they said, we do not permit the eating of udders. In Pumbedita, they said, we eat udders. Is it?
That's fine. And in some sense, maybe it's even a message to Chumrot that we are seeing nowadays also, because really, if in your mind you're really putting this Chumrah of the udders itself, then also your mindset is maybe kind of twisted in this direction, that you really are seeing Chumrah and really kind of negative stuff, when they really should not be. And so they're beginning to see this poor soul really in a really negative kind of a way, because they really have trained themselves to be just very chumrah minded.
Well, what I would say, here, there's someone before me, yes.
I just have a question of whether in Surah, maybe the people themselves weren't as learned and wouldn't have been able to do all the different things and what they needed to do complicated-wise to kasher the others. Maybe they were more learned in the other town, and they felt that they could trust them to that. And even this man who was looking around at people's garbage and wearing borrowed clothes knew the halacha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair. Yes, there's someone in
there. It seems that in Surah they're very cognizant of the Mari Ayin issue, that like even if something is within halacha, if it doesn't look right, you shouldn't do it. And so maybe, you know, with the udders, like it's very complicated, so just don't do it because people might wonder if you're, all the things that he's going through are all married Ayin kind of issues.
Okay, yes.
I don't know if it has to be so complicated. Maybe they just didn't do it. Like, we don't have a place to get an udder here.
No. In Surah, lo achli kafli means that there was a decision. There was a takana against eating chal. Yes.
Does it have anything to do with the surrounding culture that maybe in one culture, as you say, they were used in certain pagan rites or something?
The grape pits were the pagan rites question.
Yeah, but I know about the grape pits, but also the udders. Also the fact that udders are a source of sustenance. And, how these are two different areas, and maybe they had the surrounding Goyish culture, so to speak.
Maybe udders were a delicacy and pumbedita. Here, we have two more comments, and then I will...
I don't know the answer to your question. I was just going to say, it just seems very impressive that somebody who's a poor man, a beggar in the streets, seems to know his halachot of being a beggar very well. And so maybe that speaks to the town from which he came.
Uh-huh. Yafeh. Okay, final comment.
From what I understand, which is not a lot at all, the Gemara frequently will give examples that are in the extreme, that you can't imagine that this really happened as a way of teaching. So I wonder, I don't know if that's right, first of all, but if, for argument's sake, that it is, then perhaps the Gemara is bringing this story in to teach us, to give us an opportunity to learn all of these things of Dhamma.
Well, you can't say that. You're right when you say that the Gemara will sometimes give you an extreme example. The Gemara in Sukkah speaks about, for instance, could you use an elephant as one side of the sukkah? And the Gemara is not an elephant that's tied down. The answer, by the way, in case you're wondering, is yes, you can. And the reason is because even if that elephant dies, he still is going to be the requisite pet tefachim high. You're right that when the Gemara uses such an illustration, the intent is not to practically suggest that you use an elephant as a side of the sukkah, but to see how far the principle can be carried. But in this case, what I would suggest is that you have a difference in philosophy between these two cities, Sura and Pumbedita, and I'll show you from the rest of the Gemara that I believe that that's what's being discussed here. And I believe that in Sura, did this count out now?
Not working at all.
Okay, can I be heard at the back?
Yeah.
If there is... Okay. It's back. Okay. I believe that what is at work here is a difference in philosophy. In Pumbedita, they did not legislate against eating udders. In Sura, they did. And it seems to me that the reason is quite obvious, that kashering of an udder is difficult. It is different from kashering another piece of meat. And it is very possible that either because of ignorance or laziness, that a person might decide to treat another as if it is our microphone, our amplification has gone.
You take this off the screen. It's fine. We're going. Be very unsure. We'll be scared.
Please tell me if you can hear me in the back. Okay, I will try to raise my voice. I believe that what is at play here is a difference in hashkafa, and I think the hashkafa of Sura is easily understood. It is very easy to become either lax or perhaps because of ignorance and perhaps because of laziness, to become lax with the procedure of kashering another, and then people will not be observing kashrut properly, and therefore, in order to protect the law against ignorance and against laziness, it is preferable to prohibit. It is preferable to prohibit rather than to take a chance that people will be responsible and treat another as another should be treated. I think the alternative, if you're not going to prohibit, is that you have to educate. And the question is, how you see responsibility. Do you see religion as the responsibility of the individual, and therefore you, the religious authority, have the task of educating, but ultimately the individual is religiously autonomous and it is his responsibility to obey the mitzvot, or do you remove from him that responsibility and you take it upon yourself, you, the religious leadership, to restrict his access in order to protect the law against him? And I think you'll see that line in the rest of the Gemara. Adahachi, I tuha lahavu gavra, lo have mutar avi avu avi ime, fatuhu. Meanwhile, they brought in a certain man who would not honor his father and his mother. Not honoring his father and his mother, I presume, does not refer to simply not expressing honor, but the Gemara in Kedushin asks us, what is honoring the parents? Ma'achil or mashkeh. The Gemara lists a number of tasks that one must perform to the parent in order to honor the parent, provide the parent with food and drink, malbishu machaseh, one needs to provide the parent with clothing, one needs to accompany the parent where he needs to be accompanied. That is kibud av v'heim. So now we hear that they brought before Rav Chisda, again on Erev Yom Kippur, another recalcitrant sinner. They brought another sinner and they tied him up, they tied him to a post in order to be lashed, in order to give him makot mardut, in order to give him lashes. Amar lehu, whereupon Rami bar Tamrei said to them, Shvakuhu, untie him, release him. Detanya kol mitzvat asei shematan schara v'tzida, because we are taught that every positive commandment whose reward is stipulated, ein beitin shalamata muzharin aleha, a human court has no jurisdiction over. And of course you know that kibud av v'aim, its reward is stipulated, kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, leman yarichun yamecha, so that your days will be long. So you have a positive commandment whose reward is stipulated. So Rami, seeing them tie up this individual in order to be lashed, says, untie him, because you have here a positive commandment. Obviously, Rami bar Tamrei is a Talmid Chacham, in addition to being poor. You have a man being tied up to be lashed when Beit Din actually has no jurisdiction. Amar lei, whereupon Rav Chisda said to him, I think Rav Chisda is losing his patience. Rav Chisda said to him, Chazin alach decharifat tuva, I see that you're very sharp. Amar lei, I haveit ba'atrei de Rav Yehuda. He said to him, if you are in Rav Yehuda's place, achvina lachur fai, you would see really sharp people. And I think that what is being said here, if you look at the entire flow, is at the end, at the apex of this story, you hear about someone else, not Rami bar Tamrei, who was brought into the Beit Din of Rav Chisda on Erev Yom Kippur. This is the time that all sins are being dealt with in order that one could come before Beit Din Shalmala free of sin tomorrow and be judged favorably. So this individual must be lashed now. And Rabbi Bar Tamrei says, untie him, you don't have jurisdiction because a reward is stipulated. And I believe that what Rabbi Bar Tamrei, or what the Gemara is telling us, is that you have two alternatives. If you have an incentive which is provided, that is, kabed et avicha et imecha leman yarichun yamecha, you do not need to have punishment. Baking does not need punishment. When you have these two alternatives. You have an incentive. You have education. And I believe that is the model which was chosen in Pumbedita, versus you have you have an attempt to limit, to restrain, to protect the law against people who are going to violate it in Surah. And I believe what Rami Bar-Kamri is telling us, and I believe what the Gemara is telling us, is you have two alternatives. You have the system of Pumbedita, which is a system based upon incentive, based upon education. If you don't want people to make a mistake with others, well, teach them. Teach them how to kasher an udder. And then an individual will make the decision, I am prepared to kasher an udder, even though it is a difficult process. Or an individual will say, I prefer not to bring others into my house. But the decision is left to the individual, and the task of the religious leadership is to educate. Alternately, in the case of Surah, the task of the religious leadership is to induce lashes, is to restrict access, and you have these two systems. And what I would say, because of the comment here about Chumrot, is that we need very well to be aware that this isn't just a Gemara against Chumrot. This is a Gemara that's telling us something. And that is that if you want to stay away from Chumrot, fine and good, but you had better educate. You had better, if you don't want to rely upon Chumrot to protect the law, then you have just one alternative, and that alternative is Talmud Torah. You had better sit down, you had better take responsibility for your own learning, and you had better take responsibility for Talmud Torah and for Limud Halakha, for learning Halakha within the community, because that is the way you have chosen. Good evening.
Right. Thank you. I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone for joining, to thank Rabbi Niv Henkin, and to give Bethia the microphone.
First of all, I want...
1 second. You need this.
I'm talking into this. Okay. So first of all, I want to say I apologize for coming here. We came back from a